This is our league, and this is your league. Broadcasting from the 55-yard line in Japan to the shores of the Great White North and everywhere around the world on Gridiron America Radio and the Sports History Network.
Everybody, welcome to From the 55-Yard Line live stream on YouTube. It's Dave and I tonight, and Fran is quote-unquote on assignment. He's off. He's got some time off, so he's taking a little time away. He'll be back hopefully next time we record. It's been been about a month since we've hit the record button here, mainly because of the time difference, and I've had a lot going on. Dave's had a lot going on, and here we are. So last time I think we talked, it was right before the UFL kicked off, wasn't it?
Yes.
More or less, Dave? Okay.
First games are going on that weekend. Yep.
Okay, so it really hasn't been that long since we sat down and talked. Shit. It seems like forever. It's just, I've had a lot going on here. And especially the other night, we had a big earthquake that hit about 200 miles from here. So and I tell you what, that was not the biggest I've ever felt. Biggest I ever felt was 4 months ago when the big one hit on the other side of Japan, which we felt. This one was much closer. 11:30 p.m., laying in bed, about ready to doze off. It was like, you know, the phone lit up, and as the phone was lighting up, you could feel the earth move underneath. It was one of those moments where it's like, shit, this is really happening. I'm laying there. And by the time I had really had time to react to it, it was over. So, and plus, you know, so that's just life in Japan. So how you been, man? Did you feel the earthquake up there in New York?
No, but I didn't feel the earthquake in New York, but I do have a funny story. I was actually on the phone at work, talking to someone about booking a Warhammer convention. So really? I'm literally in mid-sentence and the phone drops, the call drops. It's the weirdest thing. It's like just drops. And the guy calls you, and the gentleman calls you back. We're talking and I'm just at work. And about 2 hours later, I get another phone call. He goes, do you know when we were talking, it was when the earthquake hit? I go, now that makes sense. So, yeah. So my I had a phone call drop. That's my earthquake story. Didn't even know it happened.
my mom this morning, and she had an earthquake over where she's at in California. She goes, yeah, we had an earthquake. Yeah, she felt it too. So us, you know, being from the Midwest and everything, we don't feel earthquakes. I felt a couple living in Chicago, and they all happened at night, and on one of them, there was that moment my dog just started barking in the middle of the night. And all of a sudden you just felt the earth move, and then that was it. I'm like, oh, that explains it. The other dog, mind you, she was sleeping. Didn't even, you know, she was dead to the world at that point. She didn't care, didn't feel, but our little guy woke up and he's like, started barking, and But we don't have a dog here to give us a heads up, though. It's interesting here with the phone and the technology, because when the phone lit up, that's when outside you heard, you know, it's kind of like the tornado sirens back home. Mm. They've got the, you know, I don't know what they were saying, but they let you know there was an earthquake. But there was no tsunami warning or anything like that. So, it was good. But where we live at, and there's a huge trough off the shores of Japan, and they say when it goes it's going to be devastating in terms of the damage here. So
thanks. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. What can you do? I mean, I figure if we're screwed, everybody's screwed at that point. Yeah. There's nothing you can do. Just we live in a building that was built up to the latest code, like 2009. So, you know, hopefully, you know, you never know. Anyway, on a more positive note here.
And the only other news from around here is we had the eclipse that we're in the path of totality, but we had a cloudy day. So it was just basically it got dark in the middle of the day for nothing.
Really? Was it noticeably dark?
Oh, yeah, it was dark. Oh, yeah. Really? So we actually went, we took the family to an actual eclipse party. They had bounce houses for kids and stuff like that. And then you went outside and we had the lawn chairs out and it got dark. It felt like night for about 3.5 minutes. You sat there and from the west, it was just basically all of a sudden you see the darkness creep at you. And then you're in pitch black and then it goes across. And then 3.5 minutes later, you're watching out and it just starts getting light and just comes right across and you're back to what it was 10 minutes ago.
It's interesting because down in Southern Illinois, down in Carbondale, Carbondale was part of the last, you know, like a few years ago, the last total eclipse, and they were in the same way this one too. So it was, you know, watching the news back from Chicago and watching all the coverage there, all the news, you know, everybody from the Chicago news, you know, all the news channels were down there covering it. So it was, yeah. And I wish I could, you know, wish I could have experienced it, but I guess, I think next year we have a partial eclipse coming here and then a total solar eclipse in about say 10 years. So hopefully I will still be here. I have no plans on leaving. I have no plans on coming back to America unless it's in a pine box. So, you know, that's the plan is to be here. And, you know, it's funny too. I think in between the last couple of weeks got me, I don't know why I didn't bring one of my telescopes with me, but I bought a new telescope, another a cheapie. Oh, nice. So, you know, I can be, you know, a gentleman, amateur astronomer here. But it's like around here, just there's so much light pollution. I mean, obviously the moon and the planets I can see, but in terms of constellations and stars and stuff, it's kind of hard. I mean, there is really a ton of light pollution here. So, but you know, I've got the telescope basically to look at the moon, look at the planets.
Cool.
From the balcony. So anyway, so speaking of planets and aligning and everything, how goes the UFL? Are the planets and stars aligning for the league, or is it are we kind of just kind of a continuation from last year in terms of what do you think with in terms of the reception, attendance and all that? Do you see any significant difference from say how the league ended last year? Specifically the XFL?
I think the TV ratings are good. I mean, I'm not sure at the end of the day. I know offline we've been talking about like what's the expectations, like what going into this season, what would be a good number for television? Cause it's hard to compare. It's hard to compare XFL version 1, XFL version 2, XFL version 3, because the TV landscape changed so much.
In the last year.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that the numbers on ABC have been great. An afternoon game on ESPN, I think that's just a tough sell, period. At least looking this week, I think this week's games, I don't mean to say always look ahead to next week or let's see how this goes. I mean, this week we have the afternoon game is at 12:30 and it's on ABC. Okay. I think that's going to be good. It's going to be a good time slot, a good football time. And then you have two different games on Saturday night at 7 o'clock on Fox. So you're going to get, depending on where you are, which game. And then Sunday is going to be interesting with FS1. But I think that's the mode that they're looking to. I think they're going to try to go the games at night. Now, granted, the ABC afternoon game is they do college football at that time. So a 12:30 Saturday football game is not uncommon. So I don't think that's going to be I think that's going to be a good rating. And looking at the ratings so far, it seems like when the games are on the networks, they've been doing very well. Which,
okay. Yeah,
that I think you got a million plus. I mean, you're doing well in today's television.
Yeah.
Especially now we're creeping into spring, we're creeping into summer, where if they continue with this level of viewership, I'll say it's a success for year three for USFL, year two for XFL. The combination, trying to put this all together, late it felt like, but mm-hmm. on the field, I think the game on the field is very, very good too. You've had entertaining games.
Well, and just looking at the write up, because I've been living with the write ups and everything. Because honestly, mm-hmm. me just trying to watch a game is kind of, even like, you know, I've been kind of tuned out of the football world in North America, including the Mexican league. You know, I wanted to do the Gridiron Mexico thing, but just with time zone change, and I've just kind of found it hard just to set aside that time with so much any other things going on with me, but with me here in Japan. But when it comes to the level of play, yeah, that's the thing. And reading everything, the level of play has been great. The games have been great. So the on-field product, I don't think anybody, you know, for as much as I give UFL fans or XFL fans a hard time, the quality of play has always been great. It's just been more the hype and everything that I've and the constant spin about how great things are without any critical analysis of, okay, how do you make this better? But with all that said, yeah, the on-field product has always been great. So, but going back to what you said in terms of just where it's at right now with TV, they stay on network TV, then I think there's a chance that, you know, this thing could last a while. I mean, how long? I don't know. But I think now that we're out of college basketball season, and now we're into kind of that period before the playoffs and the NBA and the NHL, and we still got baseball going on, you know, maybe it's got a chance to kind of establish itself as, you know, not so much must-watch TV, but it's like, hey, there's a game on. Let's watch it.
Exactly. And I think some of the things they're doing non-football related have been great this year. They're doing weekly segments of best mic'd up moments. So they're putting mics on coaches, on players, and they're sharing those moments through social media, through their website, and just I'm impressed on how they're trying to get that connection, build that connection, because they're not in the cities, and that's the same repeated. We can go down that road of discussion on that, but I really think they've done a really good job on taking the players, taking who they have, the personalities, and connecting them to build that. Because you want to know about the Stallions because of this player, or
right,
the Renegades because of this, or the show. But the list goes on and on. And it's the name of the player is not really so much important. It's building that. So you want to see that. You want to see. I mean, they have a nice piece on their website where they break down every single touchdown of week three or week one or week two. So they show those moments in clips, and it's just great. I mean, I think
sounds a lot better than what we got last year.
Yeah, I agree, and it just seems like the extra time it took to put this all together, it looks like they really sat down and said, you know what? What's the best of USFL? What's the best of the XFL? Let's put this together. Let's define some people's roles. Your job is to do this. Your job is to do this. Let's take our made for TV sport. And then let's package it up where, hey, here's all the touchdowns, here are the big hits, here are the mic'd up moments from coaches, from players, of things, of what's happening during the games. And it's just, it really shows. And I'm impressed.
Cool. Yeah, I wish, I'm frustrated in the sense that I know part of the games are on ESPN Plus, which I can get with VPN, but I'm not able to see the other games now. Like I said before, just in terms of me just kind of tuning out everything. So maybe this weekend I'll finally tune in and see what everything looks like. And like I said, it sounds like they've listened to the critics.
Yes.
Saying how we make things better.
I agree.
But now with that said though, from what I've been reading, I was just reading an article from Mike Florio, other than St. Louis, attendance sounds like it's anemic.
It's not great, but I'm not sure. Once again, I'm not sure what the expectation was.
Right.
Were the Michigan Panthers going to draw 40,000 a game?
No.
And that's really the question. With you had a selling season of what, 2 months?
Yeah.
By the time they put this all together, I mean, I'm not trying to make excuses for attendance. I'm truly not. But I really think, I mean, and it's tough because I understand Pro Football Talk's got to watch out for themselves. They got to make sure that their allegiance is with the NFL. So right. They're gonna, I'm not saying they're taking shots, but it's a valid point to bring up. But it's really only a problem for the UFL, because if they're not making enough money, someone's got to cover that cost. Yeah. But I really think with just 8 teams that they had, I mean, when we've talked about this before, like you have the doomsday budget, you have the okay budget, and you have the best possible scenario budget. So I think they're hitting the expected budget, okay. which I think is what they planned on.
Okay.
It seems like they've also streamlined a lot of things as well, by being in year two, year three, however you want to play this out. I think they've worked out a lot of the kinks. They've worked out of a lot of different things, I think, that make it a smoother run business financially, where you're not having those startup costs for the USFL year three. So you're taking that cost and splitting it out over years. So now you're at the tail end of that initial spend. So how that positions you moving forward, like I said, I'm getting into the weeds here on the financial side of it, but I think I know the seems like they're adding sponsors, whether it's the broadcast website, whatever the case may be. It seems like there's support there. It may not be necessarily 25,000 people a game at every single facility, but it looks like overall from the league that there's a support saying we're getting there, we're behind.
Well, and with that said, just from a historical perspective, you know, discounting everything, my criticisms, everything from of The Rock and Danny and everything that happened before, because, you know, you and I both had this conversation last year. It seemed like every week it was every week was about them. And it sounds to me like, just from what I'm reading, what I'm seeing on social media in terms of the feedback, it's now focused on the players and the league. It's not about them anymore. And maybe, and that to me, that was a turnoff, obviously, with the XFL. The name XFL was a turnoff too. It just sounds to me like they're at least listening to their critics, and hopefully it will grow outside. And that's the other thing I've always had an issue with how the spring leagues have catered. It's always been to one specific subset of fan, meaning the wrestling fan in the South. So hopefully after this year, it will grow. Whether it expand, I think expansion just based on the attendance numbers is kind of premature, but they could get a few more northern teams. That would be good because other than I think Michigan's the only really other northern team, right?
I wouldn't call DC north. So yeah.
Yeah.
That's the next one.
Yeah. So maybe, I mean, we'll see. I mean, like I said, everybody on, you know, my humor, and you know my humor, so you get my humor and you get where I'm coming from on all my memes. But too many people out there says you want this league to fail. No, I never said I wanted it to fail, but you know, it is what it is, and it is minor league football. It's still in the embryonic stages of development, and you can't make more of it than what it really is. Now, guys like Los Mysterio on Facebook are hitting the panic button right now. But in a rare, you know, I'll say this much, if he ever listens or watches here, I think he might want to pump the brakes on panic here, because it just sounds to me, and from the way it reads, the UFL is still learning its lessons, I would hope, from history, because it sounds to me like the UFL is very much in that first year of the original USFL stages. Still trying to figure things out. So hopefully they're learning the now, you know, as much as I'd love to go back to 1983, and I'm kind of glad we're not 1983. I mean, you look at the attendances for those teams, and there was only what, I think it was 12 teams back then. But back, you know, we're never going to have that type of, for a spring league, going to have that type of, I don't know, enthusiasm, attendance numbers that we had back in 83. So 83 to me is still the standard by which all spring leagues should be measured, because that's when you had record-setting crowds. You remember the championship for the 83 USFL championship? That was a spectacle. That was a great game, and it was a spectacle. So to me, so hopefully, you know, hopefully they'll get there. And I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Hopefully it's going to succeed.
And you had the bad teams. You had the bad teams, yeah, in 83 in the USFL. So
you had your Washington Federals. Yeah. But one of the best logos in the league, I still say, though, that was the one thing about the USFL compared to the now. Man, the uniforms and logos were much better back then. That's just me.
Well, it is, but we've also had, I hate to, 40 years of staring at them to enjoy them and bring out the folklore. Yeah, and then now it's become mythical, the USFL. Yeah. When those crowds, even go back to the World Football League, when you find out that they're announcing 50,000 people, and I think it might have been Philadelphia, and 44,000 of those tickets were given away. So
right,
it's one of those things where it was a wonderful time. But
we didn't have social media to keep them honest either. That was the other part of it.
Well, and it was a time where we trusted them. I mean, right. George Allen talked and everybody listened.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was one of those things where it's like, it's the facts of life. You take the good, you take the bad.
Yeah. 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 Well, speaking of bad, let's switch topics a little bit. You know, cancer killed, murdered OJ, apparently. So, as a Buffalo Bills fan, what say you?
What say me? unbelievable football player.
Yeah.
Just separating the football side of things, really regret the Bills didn't put together a better offense with him back in the 70s. Nothing, like I said, Joe Ferguson was a very good quarterback. They had could name off all those guys from those teams in the 70s, but it was just too one dimensional. The electric company, they like Reggie McKenzie, Joe DeLamalier, they blocked for him. They got the 2,000 yards in 73. They just couldn't put enough of a passing game. You're not gonna win consistently when you run 44 times and you pass 10. And that's really what that offense was really relied on OJ Simpson to do everything, because honestly, he could. I mean, some of those teams had some very good years, they had some very awful years, but it was just, unfortunately, it was 9-10 years of just run, hand it off to OJ.
And the other part of that too is they had Miami Dolphins in their division.
Oh yeah, no doubt. The Miami Steelers. You had a solid 3-4 teams at every single year.
Right.
I mean, it seemed like every other year the Baltimore Colts had a great team too. Yeah. So they were right there in the '70s, and the Patriots would pop up every couple of years too. So
the
it was
Browns.
Like, yeah, I mean the Bills,
the Bills, Bengals, Browns, go, and the Bengals too.
Yeah, the Bills could go 10-5 and not make, or 9-5 and not make the playoffs back then. That regularly happened. So it's just tough. It's unfortunate. There's one thing from his playing days in Buffalo is I wish they would have put together a little better passing game to help him. I think that's the one thing that they really missed. They had great defenses back then too.
And Joe Ferguson, like you said, was a good quarterback. In fact, he was such a good quarterback. I mean, he played in the league a long time. I saw Joe Ferguson play his last game. That's the only thing football history wise that I still hang my hat on, and it's just a weird set of circumstances because this was back in 1990. Went down to Indianapolis to see. It was for my birthday. It was a birthday present. Went to see the Colts and the Dolphins play. And it was, you know, it was the Dolphins all the way. But they had, I think it was it Jeff George or Jeff True? But anyway, the first two quarterbacks got knocked out of the game. And in comes Joe Ferguson. And I just remember we were all sitting around there going, he's still playing? And he went in there for like the last few series, and then that was it. And then years later, I went into Pro Football Reference. I go, oh my God, that was his last game. So, but I remember him playing during the '70s, but you said, he had nothing other than OJ. And actually, I think by the time I was watching, again, I was 10 years old. So it's 77, 78. OJ had left to go to the Niners too. So he had nothing to work with back then. And, and for people who don't remember OJ, I mean, he was, there's a lot of people out there. It's funny now it was interesting to hear all the talk now compared to 30 years ago when that trial was almost 30 years ago. That murder was almost 30 years ago. No, actually it was more than the murder was over 30 years ago, wasn't it?
It's right around there.
But back then we all knew who OJ was, and now fast forward 30 years to watch TV and to listen to the radio and listening to Dan Patrick, it's like, now you had to explain, moving forward, have to explain who he was and what he was all about and why he mattered back then. It was I remember when the whole thing happened over here, people over here in Japan knew who OJ was. It's one of those pop culture moments that I don't think we'll get back. However, Trump's trial starts this week, so maybe we'll have that will take on a life of its own. But unfortunately, there are no cameras in the courtroom.
Yeah, I feel as good as talking about that as I do about OJ.
Yeah, no, I'm trying to. When it comes to that, I just read the Drudge Report, read the headlines, watch Kimmel. Okay, I'm done. I just got to put it away, because otherwise it just becomes, like I said before we started, man, there's a lot of things happening in this world today. It's straight out of a science fiction novel.
Yeah.
And the whole Trump and the whole Trump being president thing and everything, that's something right out of a science fiction novel. Like, holy shit. art, life's imitating art. And but with that said, talking about the NFL, so we got the NFL draft coming up here in about, what was it, next week?
Yeah, next week. Yeah, it's coming quick.
So we know who the Bears are grabbing. Now it's everybody else trying to figure out what everybody else is going to get.
Well, it sounds like just doing some reading and listening, it sounds like it's going to be quarterback after quarterback after quarterback. They're talking it might be the first four picks of all quarterbacks.
Are the Cardinals going to grab a quarterback?
Well, and here's the thing. There's talk of the Broncos moving up. There's just a lot of talk of all the top six quarterbacks all going in the first round and just having a big run on quarterbacks. So it'll be interesting.
If that happens, then that means there's going to be a surplus of older guys. It's kind of like, okay, we're buying all new equipment, and we got all this great used equipment that in some cases is barely used.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. I haven't really been following the draft talk because I usually don't, except when it comes to my team with the chicken head on their helmet. And, Kyler Murray belongs in the CFL, period. He has no business, at least to me. I mean, he's a great fantasy player, but when it comes to an actual, being a team quarterback and a leader and a winner, he's not. So I'm just curious how that's going to play out but again, the Cardinals would do what they always do every year, except the years that they drafted Larry Fitzgerald and Quan Bolden. They're going to disappoint. So that's my expectation.
It'll be interesting. Like I said, there's so many moves out there that are still to be made. Of who's jumping up, who's jumping down. It's like if you're sitting at 2, 3, 4, or 5, and someone offers you, say you're Washington at number 2, and you're talking with, I don't know. I guess the question is who's looking for a quarterback? In essence, are the Chargers looking for a quarterback? Probably not. New England's looking for a quarterback, obviously. Washington, I would say, is looking for a quarterback. But at 4, how much time's left on Kyler Murray's contract?
Oh, a lot of time's left on Kyler Murray's contract.
So unless you're able to trade him, you're not going to pick that up. So the Chargers, I don't see the Chargers. I don't see the Giants. At 7's the Titans. The 8, the Falcons just signed. They're not looking for a quarterback now.
Right. They got Kirk Cousins, right?
Yeah. And then the Bears are back at 9. So, I mean, the Bears should be able to get a quarterback and a receiver because there are so many great receivers, too, in this draft.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see. I mean, what was it? John Gunning sent me told me the other day. He's like, there was a list of like 30-yard people that have thrown for over 30 touchdowns on every team, and it just go through. The Bears don't have any quarterbacks that have ever thrown for 30 touchdowns a season. So, expecting.
You had Walter Payne for how many years? So it's one of those things where you have to discount probably half the seasons of the Bears' existence based on the level of running backs.
Yeah. Well, and then there were the Jay Cutler years, and Jay Cutler was a great quarterback. I mean, he could have been a Super Bowl winning quarterback on any team other than the Bears.
Mm-hmm.
And he couldn't make it happen. So I don't know. I mean, it's always, when we're always looking back, that's the thing with the Bears. Walter was a great quarterback, but they've had some guys come in who were good quarterbacks who could have done a lot if they would have had more around them, including Jim Harbaugh. Jim Harbaugh was a great quarterback. Mm-hmm. He was a winner. He was a tough guy. I mean, Jim Miller. Who else? Jay Cutler. I mean, there's some guys that they had that just – even Doug, well, they had Doug Flutie for a cup of coffee, if you remember that.
I thought Mike Tomczak did a pretty good job.
He was serviceable, but he wasn't, I don't know. I never liked Tom Zach.
I mean, compared to who was there at the time, compared to who was there.
Right. But yeah, he was, I don't know what, oh, he ended up playing for the Steelers. That's right. I'm trying to think where he went to play. Yeah, went to play for the Steelers and then, yeah. But yeah, I don't know, man. It's going to be a long season for Bears fans. Though with Buffalo, man, if you guys don't go to the Super Bowl this year, man. But then again, who's going to get it? Is Kansas City just going to reload? That's the question.
It's tough. It's going to be tough. I mean, the rumor for the Bills is taking that second round pick you got for Diggs or Stephon Diggs and package that up and moving up to get a receiver in the top 10. That's been the rumor, and I think that will suffice. I mean, it's he's a good player. He's a good, very good player. His numbers, the second half of the season, for whatever reason, dropped drastically to the point where he was averaging 4 or 5 catches for 50, 60 yards. Now, what was the reason for that? You can point at several different things, but it looked at the end of the day, you know what? The window is closing. Don't need the distractions. If you don't want to be here, cool. That's okay. Right. We'll move on and we'll take what we can get and figure it out.
Okay. Well, we know this much about Kansas City. They're going to have to get somebody to replace Rashid Rice.
Yep.
So.
And you know what? They will.
Yeah, they will.
And Andy Reid, he's underestimated so many years. He just was missing a couple pieces in Philadelphia.
Oh, yeah.
But
well, it's amazing to see him just Kansas City. What since what year did Mahomes take over quarterback?
5 years ago.
5 years ago. I mean, it's just you do not bet against Kansas City.
No.
At all. And I don't like Kansas City. I'm not big. I mean, their fan base is kind of becoming, I don't know, they're almost as annoying as the Packers and the Cowboys, but not quite. It's like they're somewhere. I mean, the Cowboys to me are the most annoying fan base ever. And Green Bay's right. And being from Chicago, Green Bay's right there. But, you know, in terms of the teams and the talent level, I mean, I don't know, man. I just can't see anybody beating Kansas City.
The Patriots and Dolphins are for me what the Packers and the Cowboys are for you.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see the Patriots being – well, the Patriots, though, have had – it's like the Packers with the Bears. It's like – I've heard Bears fans just, like, talk smack on Packers fans. Like, oh, your team's garbage and that. No, wait a minute. They own the Bears, you know. And I don't know. I just – but when any time that the Packers have lost – all the fans that I know of over the years that I was close to would always say, well, the refs, why are you saying that you lost? Just let it be.
Yep.
You know, you lost. I mean, Bears fans don't really complain about the refs, but they'll complain. I don't know. And that's what I like about football fandom. We can talk smack on each other's fan bases, but in the end, we all like football. So, yep. You know, and even me with the XFL, you know, talking smack with the XFL fans. Of course, that's gotten downright personal, and I've left it alone for at least the last couple of weeks. You know, just we all want football to succeed. Yep. Just, you know, yep. It just – but the problem is now with the UFL going kind of full circle on this, are you seeing much in terms of the media, the mainstream media covering the UFL? Are we still kind of reliant on the fan – created websites to kind of carry the load in terms of coverage? Because I'm seeing more on my end from CBS and Fox and NBC than I think I did last year.
I agree. Yes, and when you have Mike Florio talking about it, Pro Football Talk, I mean, it's definitely has a larger place in the football sphere this year than it did in the past. Where does that go? Now we have the draft, and will some of that dissipate with the draft coming up and going into then the mini camps and things like that? I think The crowds in the games will make that happen. Like if St. Louis has another record break, if St. Louis breaks a record every single week as we go through this season,
yeah.
And we have a close race for the playoffs, and we have some remarkable touchdowns and things that they're doing, the UFL needs to give a reason for the media to cover it.
Right.
Is really what I think it comes down to. And then they're getting a lot of talk of the two issues we talked about today, the great crowds in St. Louis and the not so great crowds everywhere else. And that's, you have the two camps, and that's what you have with social media and the fan pages and the fan covering is, oh my goodness, St. Louis is amazing. And then you have Chicken Little, the sky's falling everywhere else.
Yeah.
And it's just,
it reminds me of the old American Football Conference where you had the Cleveland Browns carrying the load. I mean, plus with that said too, Cleveland won the league every year. So they were the top team, and then there was everybody else. And that league eventually went away after four. Of course, that's apples to oranges. That was an autumn league versus a spring league. So hopefully, I mean, obviously, you know, you're not, it doesn't look like you're having the same issues like you had last year with Orlando and Vegas.
True. They weeded those out. You're exactly right. They weeded out the glaring problems, and they picked the best eight, which I thought was the right thing to do.
Yeah. I'm just curious. Yeah. And like you said, hopefully, you know, hopefully they don't expand. They hold off on expansion for a couple of years until they get the attendance where it needs to be. Cause I think just in looking at everything and looking ahead, I think they've kind of figured out over the air TV is kind of the place to be to keep the numbers steady. But again, it's like everything else, what's coming up in the sports schedule that's going to pull eyes away. You know, you've got the WNBA that I think is on the threshold of a breakthrough with everything that's going on there after this year with, you know, everybody, you know, this in Indiana, the team out in Indiana, their season tickets went through the roof. So we'll see. And I think women's sports is really going to come of age here this year.
Good. It's about time.
And, yeah.
I think Las Vegas sold out all their tickets through season tickets.
Yeah.
The team that Brady co-owns.
Yeah. And so there's just a lot. It's going to be interesting moving forward. And I know here in Japan, we still got baseball going on, but I've yet to really focus in on baseball. It's hard. You know, it's really weird because I don't spend a whole lot of, obviously the baseball games are on here at night, but I haven't really been spending a lot of time in my man cave at night. I need to change that because I need to have a baseball game on one screen and do my Commodore 64 stuff on the other screen and, you know, all that good stuff. But I think I'm trying to think last time. I don't even think we talked about it last. Oh, no. The last time we talked was about Shohei Ohtani.
Oh, yes.
Gambling thing. So here's the thing with that. Here, they're still talking about it. It's on the talk shows here every day. And I told my wife, I go, yeah, that's old news. Nobody's talking about it in the States anymore.
They're trying here, but there's no information. Here's the thing. Yeah. There's nothing. There's no leaks. There's nobody. There's nothing. I mean, even like, I'll be honest, when it first reported, I watched it. I heard the news. And then I stopped because it was just everybody wanted the click of speculation. So right. It was just getting more salacious and more crazy. And so many people were talking about how can you not know how much money you have? Like when you're that wealthy, you don't.
Right.
Like you literally have these people doing things for you because they can't afford it.
Right. And the other aspect of this is Shohei Ohtani comes to the States, doesn't really speak any English. He's relying on people. I mean, I speak from experience on this. So people have access to pay his bills, this and that. I can see how this happens without his knowledge. He's focused on baseball. That's all he's known his entire life. So that's what he's focused on. people are going to take advantage of you, especially if you are a foreigner, if you're trusting in people. And, you know, I hate saying that. I mean, you and I both know, neither one of us would trust somebody to pay our bills. We would take care of it ourselves. But I think in this instance with him, especially with the interpreter, man, if the interpreter's elite, you know, got a gambling issue, and that's how this happens, because you're trusting somebody who's got a gambling issue to take care of your bills. Yeah, your money's gonna disappear.
And he's a friend. It's one thing. Is like, it's not like he was signed by the Angels. He was brought in, and this is who the Angels got him to be as interpreter. This is a friend of his who he trusted, and he gave this opportunity. He said, look, you take care of all this. I can't do all this and be the best baseball player on the planet.
Right.
So he trusted him, and obviously he's making so much money that he can not miss this. But when you're not paying it, you're not paying bills. All you're doing is you're hitting baseballs. You're getting the right meal. You're focused on this, and you have enough money that if you want to go and do this or go that, it's just, here's my card. The bill's going to come. Someone's going to pay the AMX card, and I'm not going to worry about it.
And with that said, you know, Shohei Ohtani just got married. I guarantee you, if he would have been married when he came over here, this wouldn't happen.
True.
And I say that from experience, because, you know, my wife takes very, very good care of me and watches out for me and watches the bottom line. And so had he gotten married, you know, had he met his wife many years before he came over and got married, he wouldn't be in this situation. This would not have happened. So, it's interesting. But I haven't read the criminal complaint. And that's the thing, too. There's a federal criminal complaint out there. And speaking from experience and dealing with criminal complaints for 20 years, everything that you need to know is in that criminal complaint from the U.S. Attorney's Office. Because if it's not in there, it'll come out during sentencing when the probation office does their, because as part of this is there's going to probably be, I can't see why there wouldn't be, this, if he pleads guilty to a plea agreement that spells out exactly what he did in detail, there will be more information included in the pre-sentence report, which unfortunately the public will not see, because the pre-sentence report gives you additional factors, such as his background, how things came, the full personal story, which I always call the federal pre-sentence investigation and intelligence report. And that's what I wrote for 20 years. So when my wife and I are having this discussion, she's like, what do you think is going to happen? I go, he's going to get probation. Why do you say that? I go, because I've dealt with, 20 years writing those reports and attending sentencing hearings, they kind of know how this is going to go. And now the question is he going to have the money to pay back Shohei? Probably not. So I'm curious how that's going to, the money involved, I'm curious how that will factor in, but I can't see him getting any true prison time.
I don't know. There's a lot of money involved. It's like,
there's a lot of money involved. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Right now they've pinpointed that he stole $16 million, but I guess that goes towards the total debt that he rang up of $40 million. So the question is, where's the other 24?
He gambled it all.
Does he have it? Well, the whole thing is like, and because this is because he's not a non-American, doesn't speak English, or like I said, there's not a whole lot of leaks and things like this, is even with the 37-page document that came out of earlier this week about all of this, there's still a lot of, and I don't like playing the speculation game, but there's still a lot of like, what about this? What about this?
There's more to the story. It's so one of those. That's what I miss.
They're saying on this, I'll end on this part because this is just wild. They're saying between December of 2021 to January of 2024, he placed 19,000 bets.
Is that even physically possible? Well, yeah, it is, I should say, but it's all
it is, but that's a serious problem. We're not talking about my parlay hit for the NFL this week. Like you're gambling on some serious stuff.
That's when you know you got a problem.
Well, and I think that amount of money it's going to take some time to get that all. Like they have a lot of information, but just going to take a lot of time to weed through all that stuff. I mean,
in federal court, when you plead guilty to the offense, and I don't know when the plea agreement will be public. It should be a matter of public record. Mm-hmm. And what the plea agreement does, it'll spell out everything that he's agreeing to in terms of the sentence. And includes losses and everything. But when it comes to losses, you have actual loss versus intended loss, which is a whole nother issue that goes into, and again, I say this is, that was my job to figure all this out for the judge, what was actual, what was intended. And sentencing law it's really one of those weird subset of criminal law. Sentencing law is very subjective, but in the end, it doesn't matter. It's really weird because no matter what I would come up with or what I would figure out, I would apply in terms of what the sentencing guidelines should be. The sentencing guidelines, basically, it's a number calculation. So a loss is, you know, say a $4 million loss. I forget what it was, say 16. And then you go total everything up, and then you go to a chart, and then you have criminal histories factored in. But ultimately it boils down to what the judge thinks. And the judge can go well below those sentencing guidelines, or the judge can go above those sentencing guidelines. It's been my experience when it comes to sentencing, judges are lenient more often. And if it's out in California, in the Central District of California, those judges tend to be more lenient, much like they were in Chicago, because it's more of a liberal. They're very liberal when it comes to, now if this happened in Texas in a red state, or in a more rural state or a more rural district, the punishment would probably be a lot stiffer. So if he does get prison time, it could be, you know, a year and a day. That's kind of, when I say not real prison, but I can't see him getting prison time, but you know, I could be wrong. I've been wrong. As you well know, I've been wrong about a lot of things, especially on this podcast. And, but on this one, I can't see him doing a lot of prison time. But it boils down to what the judge thinks, the way the judge depends upon a lot. I mean, the whole sentencing process with the federal system is truly a process. And it's not like county court or state court, where you've got 5 minutes for your case. No, you go to sentencing hearing. I've been to sentencing hearings that have lasted days.
Wow.
Yeah. So the whatever sentence he gets will be well thought out, and it could very well be agreed to too in the plea agreement. He may be agreeing to a certain amount of time in lieu of paying restitution. We just don't know until that final document comes out. Though I think a lot of things are going to be left to the sentencing judge to figure out come the day he goes to court to get sentenced. And is the interpreter, is he a U.S. citizen or a legal resident?
That's a great question. I'm not even sure.
Yeah. Cause if he's a legal resident, he's going back to Japan.
I assume that would be, he's going to disappear. He might service, cause there's talk of 2 to 4 years that's been bounced around. And I just assume that if he is, he'd do his 2 to 4 years, and then Japan would go.
Well, no, if he did his 2 to 4 years, what would happen is immigration would revoke his residency, and then he would be a deportable alien. And there's a whole, that's a whole nother part of the pre-sentence report that's addressed. Yeah, I like kind of, it's been a while. It's been almost two years since I retired. It's been a while since I've like looked at the type of work I used to do and going, oh, I remember how it was done. So
over here, the biggest, I mean, that's still talked about. The biggest Ohtani news here right now is his contract. And the state of California is catching wind to how this contract was put together.
Oh, really?
So it's 10 years, $2 million a year. And then after 10 years, it goes to $68 million a year. But there's a kicker. That 68 is payable to wherever he chooses to live. So if he, say he plays 10 years and retires and moves back to Japan, California doesn't get any taxes on that.
Really?
And California is like, huh, we got to take a look at this to see if this contract is legal. Because now it's, they're looking to see how does it impact, does it violate income tax laws? So the agency and the agents got so cute that the federal government, it's the California state government, but it could go farther up. They're going, oh, so this is what you're doing. And honestly, at the time, I don't think it was an egregious thing to stick it to California. I just think they were looking at creative math to be able to assign all these players and still stay within under the luxury tax.
Yeah. Dealing with
a byproduct of that, but California's like, huh, this is interesting.
Yeah. And then also too, there's the Japanese tax system too. He's going to have to pay. That's a whole nother.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, I'm just glad it ain't me. I paid my, you know, filed my taxes. I'm done. But yeah, to deal with, you know, that type of stuff. Oh man, I didn't hear about that. So it'd be interesting. I'm gonna have to catch up. I'm gonna have to go research that and find out what that's all about too. So, well, my friend, it's almost in an hour here for us. So, any last thoughts before we sign off here? It's right now. It's just you and I. It is late night in the 10:30 there in up in upstate New York.
Yep.
And so we haven't. You know, I think a few people have popped in on, just one or two people have popped in or stumbled upon the live stream. So hopefully after we put this to bed and hit the stop button, people will watch us. And hey, if you're out there watching for, you know, and you know, got any comments, post a comment, tell us we're wrong. Tell us we're a-holes. Doesn't matter. You know, constructive criticism is good. And even criticism that's not constructive is good, because at least it lets us know that you're watching and listening. So, but with all that said, hey, thank you very much, everybody, for tuning in. And hopefully you'll be seeing Dave and I sooner rather than later. And especially as we get close to, you know, Dave, that's the other thing too, man. We got the CFL season coming up here. So we're going to have to, in the next week or two, we have to bring in some CFL experts from up north. I'm hoping to bring in, you know, get my buddy, get our buddies from the Third Down Gamble podcast and over at the Turf District to come on and talk some, see where we're at going into training camp with the CFL, and you know, get back kind of the roots of the show.
A lot of crazy things this week. They released went over the salary cap.
Yeah, that's right. You sent me that this morning. I saw that. So with three people, so three teams over the set. So how much is the fine? Did they spell out the fine?
I think Hamilton was like 80. They match it for every dollar you go over, you owe a dollar. So Hamilton had to pay like $85,000.
Wow. Yeah. Well, you know, hopefully it pays off for Hamilton. I guess, you know, it's.
Levi Mitchell isn't cheap.
No, not at all. Not at all. So yeah, no, we'll be bringing those guys on.
Be great,
hopefully sooner rather than later. And hopefully we'll have Fran on next time too to talk up his around the leagues. He's been covering the UFL hard, so we'll need to get him on and, you know, cover down on what's been going on with the UFL from his perspective. And hopefully, you know, hopefully by the time next time we talk, it'll be, you know, I think we're going into week, but we're in week four now with the UFL, right?
Correct.
So hopefully by week five, I mean, we get a good gauge as to where the league's going in terms of ratings wise. Cause I think it looks to me like things have stabilized and, you know, I don't foresee any huge drop in ratings if things keep going the way they're going. Just a matter of attracting new fans. And that's kind of what the league needs to do to, for long-term survival. So, okay. With all that said, it is, this is Greg and for Dave. Thank you very much for watching and for tuning in. And we will be talking to you again very, very soon. Let me see here. As I am still figuring things out as we go along. So, and hopefully by next time, we'll be getting rid of the StreamYard logo and replacing it with our own. So with all that said, hey, thank you very much for tuning in and listening and watching us. And you can find us on the sportshistorychannel.com and from the 55yardline.ca. And with all that said, hey, thanks very much and talk to me soon. Bye-bye.
This is Johnny Unitas of the Baltimore Colts. Let's go, you Colts.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.